Hello and welcome to the Third Sector podcast. I'm Rebecca Cooney, Senior Features and Analysis Writer.
And I'm Andy Ricketts, News Editor of Third Sector, the UK's leading publication for the voluntary and not-for-profit sector.
Each week we sit down for a quickfire conversation about interesting or unusual goings-on in the charity world.
And this week we're discussing our biennial charity pay study and chatting to Christiana Rickson, Head of Policy at the charity leaders body Akivo, about some of the issues it has thrown up.
And as always, we'll be unwrapping our coronavirus care package of good news stories. But first, Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And I have a question for you. What would you do with £4.6 million a year?
That's a lot of money. What you mean aside from give most of it away to charities and other good causes?
Yes, of course.
Well, I guess that most of the people who know me would know that my interests tend to go towards the geekier end of the spectrum, shall we say. So it's possible that one thing, if I had not an unlimited, but a very large sum of money, I would be tempted to buy a Stormtrooper costume from the Star Wars film series. I kind of grown up always loving Star Wars. And actually there is our offices are in Twickenham, and just the other end of Twickenham, there is a store where the guy who made the original Stormtrooper costumes for George Lucas back in the 1970s actually sells these Stormtrooper costumes, and clearly I've never looked into it. But it just so happens that I think they sell for about 1,500 quid.
Okay. Just ballpark estimation.
Yeah. Just plucking that out of the air. But yeah, I've always thought that if you had money to burn on something totally frivolous, then I think a Star Wars Stormtrooper costume would be pretty amazing. And actually, there's a bunch of guys who do real hardcore kind of Stormtrooper dressing up for charity. There's like this thing called the 501st Squadron, which is a group of people who obviously love Star Wars, and they do dressing up in their costumes, and then they go and appear at charity events and that kind of stuff. So
it would in fact be an investment in charity fundraising, is what we're
obviously
saying. Yeah, obviously.
It wouldn't satisfy any of my personal needs in any way. What about you?
So I think I would, yes, obviously, the money to charity, because of course.
Of course.
Definitely buy a horse. That would be my thing. My thing I've always thought is if I were kind of, you know, in the millionaire level of rich, I think I would default to cocktails on a night out. Like, I like beer and wine and stuff, but like, you know, that the cocktails are expensive, but I feel like my life would just be that much better if I could just have, you know, nice fruit juices with alcohol in all the time. And then the other thing I was thinking is get a house with room for a library. Mm. And in my head, it's sort of somewhere between the one in Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the one in Beauty and the Beast. I don't know if either of these two cultural references, if maybe that's just a specific to my age group, but those somewhere in the middle there. Basically, lots of stairs, lots of big bookshelves, lots of sort of scrolly banisters and things. That would be my...
Excellent. You know, you can accommodate the equivalent number of books probably in your tablet just by using some kind of digital reader.
I feel you're missing the point here, Andy.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. So, as you'll know, the reason I'm asking this is because 4.6 million was the amount of money brought in by the highest earner in our charity pay study this year. Every 2 years since 2013, Third Sector has compiled a list of the highest salaries paid by the biggest UK charities. The study has documented gradual growth in the largest pay packages earned by the voluntary sector's highest paid individuals. So Andy, you compiled the latest study, which is available in the current issue of Third Sector magazine. What did you find?
Well, the first thing we have to do is put a huge caveat on the results, because the study was compiled using information from the most recent sets of charity accounts. And as you know, they tend to lag behind a little bit because of filing deadlines and that kind of stuff. So the most recent data relates to the financial year ending in March 2020. And of course, the big thing that's happened since then is the COVID days. So it's all pre-pandemic.
This is all from the before times. And of course, a lot of chief executives and senior staff members took temporary pay cuts at various points last year. So the picture may now look a little bit different. But with that caveat out of the way, what did we see in this year's study?
Well, the top of the list is typically dominated not by household name charities, but by philanthropic foundations, charitable private hospitals, arts bodies, and educational establishments. And the one thing those organisations have in common is that they do relatively little public fundraising. And this year was no exception, with the grant maker, the Wellcome Trust, again topping the list by an extremely large margin. The highest paid person there, Peter Pereira Gray, chief executive of the charity's investments division, received a package including salary, bonus, long-term incentive plan and allowances totalling more than £4.6 million.
That is a heck of a lot of money. And notably, that's not the figure that's getting paid to the overall leader of the organisation. When we have these conversations, normally we sort of default to thinking about the chief executive of the organisation, but that's not what Peter Pereira Gray does.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Wellcome Trust is a bit of an outlier in that it employs its own in-house investment team to manage its enormous portfolio, which I think totals about £30 billion in value, which it says is more cost-effective and produces better results than if it was outsourced. The team includes 7 people who received total salary packages worth at least £1.25 million over the course of 2019-20, all of which outstripped the person in second place on Third Sector's latest top 100. Wellcome says remuneration for this team is directly linked to the long-term performance of its investments. And it looks like that's done pretty well recently. The charity's investments grew by more than £3 billion during the course of the year, despite the negative effects of the coronavirus pandemic on the global financial markets. And the charity says that over the past decade, investment returns have averaged just under 10% a year in real terms, enabling its annual charitable spend to approximately double.
Okay, so that makes sense that these staff members are getting fairly big pay packets. So of all the people who are highest paid at their charity, who was it that came in second?
So that was Steve Gray, chief executive of Nuffield Health. He received a year-on-year increase to his financial package of about £90,000 to between £930,000 and £940,000. Nuffield Health runs hospitals, wellbeing services and fitness centres and said it agreed to pay a bonus to Gray last year if he met, quote, rigorously defined organisation targets, a standard practice across organisations and businesses of our size and complexity. And then in third place, we've got Sir Antonio Papano, the music director at the Royal Opera House. He has a base salary of £115,000 and then got more than £600,000 of separately contracted fees for conducting and directing as required, bringing his total pay up to £839,000 plus.
Cool. So a lot of money sloshing around in our top three, but also quite a big disparity, actually, or kind of big drop, particularly between first and second. Mm. So how do the overall findings, obviously we don't just look at the top earners, but how do these findings compare to last year?
Well, among charities that have major fundraising activities, which represents almost half of the charities in our top 100, salaries are generally lower than in other categories and have grown at a slower rate. That does make sense, as these charities are more likely to have to worry about public opinion. Our data shows that the mean pay among these charities was £194,000, just £1,000 higher than the figure in the study conducted in 2019 and £8,000 higher than in 2017. By contrast, the median of the highest salaries paid by the grant-making foundations that made up the list was up by £100,000 compared with 2 years ago to £285,000.
Right, so we're seeing kind of a big rise in the grant-making salaries and less so much in these kind of public fundraising charities. And yeah, this question of public opinion is an important one. Like, there is this discomfort among the general public around charity pay. And if you ask anyone on the street, I think they're very likely to tell you that charity chief executives get paid too much. And one thing I've always thought is really telling. So we changed how we measure our audience interaction on our website in the last couple of years. But in the first few years I was at Third Sector, what we used to see time and time again was whenever there was a scandal about charities in the tabloid papers, and it didn't really matter what the scandal was about, whether it's about fundraising, something else, the most recent charity pay study would suddenly become one of the most read things on our website, like clockwork. Automatically. And I just think it's really indicative of how people view this. It's just an issue that is always kind of bubbling away there, sort of lurking in the background. And the minute people are annoyed by a charity, it kind of comes out as a, oh, and another thing, they pay people too much as well. But yeah, you've been doing this salary study for a number of years now. So I wanted to ask you, what's the kind of most striking thing about it for you?
Well, I think the most interesting thing about it is the fact that a number of household name charities that are among the largest by annual income don't pay their highest earners enough to feature in the top 100. That's one of the things that you've just been talking about when it comes to public opinion. But charities like Oxfam GB, Save the Children UK and Sight Savers, all of which are in the top 20 in the UK in terms of annual income, pay their leaders comparatively far less when set against the size of the organisation they are managing. And these are the ones that tend to be those that get the most flack from the public for being overpaid, when actually salary levels at these organisations are relatively restrained, particularly when you consider that the median pay of the FTSE 100 chief executives was £3.6 million in 2019, according to the think tank, the High Pay Centre. But organisations like Oxfam weren't paying their top people enough to get into our top 100.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And there is this argument that if you want people to lead these multi-million pound organisations, you're going to have to pay them something commensurate with what they could get in the private sector. And actually, you know, they're not even doing that. And as you say, still attracting that flack. So to find out more about this issue, we spoke to Christiana Rickson, head of policy at Akivo. We started out by asking her what her response was to our study's findings.
So I think obviously the issue of executive pay in charities is clearly of interest to the public, and they want to know how donations and money is being spent that is being received by charities. I think I always have to start by cautioning that, you know, the largest couple of hundred charities by income, and I know that it doesn't cross over exactly with this study, but the largest couple of hundred charities by income represent, you know, less than 1% of registered charities in England and Wales. So the research is not representative of the breadth of the sector, where you're much more likely to find, you know, charities run by volunteers than those that have any paid staff at all. And a plug for our own research, so that when you do look at CEO salary, then the average salary we found in 2020 was just under 56K. But I think, you know, looking at this research like specifically, I think it was really interesting that the charities that were quoted about how they reached decisions on executive pay did give quite specific answers about how they got to those decisions. So, you know, Wellcome Trust talked about linking pay to return on investments, which is relatively rare in the charity sector. The Royal Opera House talked about having a base salary and then having additional fees for kind of directorship responsibilities, which again is a really kind of unusual operating model. So it shows how difficult it is to say charity pay when we're talking about such wildly different organisations.
Yeah, it's very different to create a blanket rule at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't think it would be possible to do so because charities operate, they have different operating models, they're different sizes, different purposes, different groups of people that they're serving. It's about looking at all of those things.
And charity pay, particularly that of charity chief executives, is one of the most consistently contentious issues across the voluntary sector. What do you think is behind that feeling?
I think there are probably quite a few, but I'll try and pick up on two, maybe. I think one is that people, like so many people, still don't know that charities pay any staff at all. And I include myself in that. Before I worked for a charity, I think it was in my mid-20s, and I started volunteering for a charity, I suddenly realised that some of the people in the organisation were paid. I thought, oh, I'd quite like to do that. And then my parents were, how are you going to pay rent? And I said, no, they'll pay me. So I think if your first knowledge that charities pay staff at all is a headline article in a press which is talking about salaries of over 150K, that disconnect would really understandably be really jarring to move from one place to another so quickly. And whenever you have like a disconnect like that, it can create strong reactions and emotions. So I completely understand why some people get, you know, really shocked about that. I think the other thing that's really important to kind of cover is about the language that we use to talk about executive pay. You know, it's similar to the discussions about people talk about overheads, you know, office rent, utility bills, and how that's apparently, you know, in some people's eyes, different to frontline charity work. But obviously, that's I would say that's a false equivalence. You know, you can't run a hospice without heating and lighting. You know, you can't research a cure for cancer without scientific equipment. And you can't run a complex organisation that meets all of its regulatory requirements, supports its staff and is financially stable without someone leading the organisation. So salaries of all staff is charity work.
Does the sector need to do more to address this criticism around charity pay head on, either by making changes and reducing the levels of charity pay in some circumstances, or by kind of, you know, seeking to sort of have the argument properly and make the argument and educate the public around some of these issues, as you say, that there is a gap in people's knowledge there?
I certainly wouldn't enter into any discussion kind of from a frame of, I think we need to educate the public like that, because I think when you say to somebody, I'm going to educate you, I'm going to tell you how it is, rarely do you ever reach a point where somebody changes their mind. But I think, you know, it's important to enter into those conversations with a real willingness to kind of listen to their point of view and understand it with kind of empathy. And I think, you know, that there are individuals and organizations who are doing that. So obviously I would say Akivo, but NCVO and the Chartered Institute of Fundraising, I know, have all had discussions with their members about how to talk, how to engage with people about questions about CEO pay. You've also seen people, you know, I know this was a number of years ago, but like Jan Tregellis, when she was CEO of Mencap, wrote in The Guardian about executive pay. Kate Lee has talked about it in response to criticism when she was CEO of Mitens Hospice, and I think again when she was at Click Sargent. So I don't think it would be right to say that there isn't an engaged debate going on already. It's definitely something I think we need to feel more confident. More people need to feel more confident entering into that space. And I think there's a role for us as the Akivo, as membership bodies, about how we help people do that. And I think there's also, you know, something for the Charity Commission and other actors who are perceived to be more neutral to talk about the realities of pay in a more nuanced way. So members of the public might not always understand CEO pay, and I can understand that, but I think there's not anyone at the Charity Commission who would say that charity shouldn't employ staff at all. And so them having that discussion and saying, you know, this is why CEOs or other members of staff are paid, this is how the decision is reached, this is what we look for as a regulator, I think those interventions would be really useful.
I suppose they can't be seen to be self-interested, can they?
The senior leaders, you mean?
You are the Charity Commission. Like, if senior leaders come out in the national papers and say, you know, actually, this is why we should be getting paid, people are probably going to see that as self-interested. Whereas, I suppose, if the Charity Commission comes and does it, like you're saying, it's a more neutral party.
Yeah, and I think it matters how the Charity Commission does it, because I think, you know, obviously, there was talk a little while ago about the Charity Commission releasing a report on CEO pay. And though I don't think anyone was saying we should never talk about that, or let's hide those figures, or don't put it out. I think there's concern, though, about how it's going to be framed, because we know that people have questions about CEO pay. I welcome those conversations. I don't think we're going to move forward in this debate until we have those conversations. But what we need to know is that it's going to come from a place of nuance, and it's going to come from a place of kind of talking about the complexity of the situation. And I think that speaks to a lot of issues in the charity sector, where we just need to start to really embrace that complexity and really embrace that challenge in a kind of open and transparent and sometimes what will feel uncomfortable way.
I mean, on that issue of communicating, Christiana, I mean, our survey found that about 2/3 of the top 100 charities in the study didn't identify their highest earner in their annual accounts that we looked at. This is kind of against what the NCVO recommended a few years ago when they did their commission into charity pay. What needs to happen to increase transparency on this issue, do you think?
Again, I would say it depends on what your definition of transparency is, what transparency means to you. So once you're identifying the name of the person and connecting that with their salary, you know, there might be people who feel uncomfortable with doing that. I think the most important thing is that when the figure is published, it's accompanied by a statement or an explanation about how the decision is reached, about why they're setting pay there, and if a supporter or a donor or somebody that the charity works with wants to discuss it with that charity, then it's really easy for them to get in touch with the charity, to have that conversation, to engage with the right people. So transparency is about data, absolutely, but it's also about a willingness to enter into those kind of conversations that we were just talking about, like a willingness to enter into conversations that are complex and challenging, and they where you know that you're starting from a position of disagreement rather than a position, you know. So I think transparency isn't just about names and figures, it's about process and understanding and sharing and empathizing as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously the picture has been a bit different in recent months as a result of coronavirus. We've had lots of people at senior levels and sort of lower down levels in charities taking sort of pay cuts, drops in pay. Do you think the pandemic is likely to have any kind of long-term effect on charity pay?
I think it's too early to tell. Sorry, that was not it's kind of dancing around the question. We've just finished collecting data for the 2021 Akibo Pay Inequalities Survey, and that will be out in September. And for the first time, we've included a specific question around whether people have taken a pay cut in the last 12 months, and if so, whether that's a temporary or permanent thing. So hopefully we'll get some indication at that point about what the longer term picture will look like.
Yeah, because I do feel like that there's, you know, either people will take permanent pay cuts, or like I could see a scenario hypothetically where, you know, it's been a very, very stressful year. Actually, we might see charity leaders saying, maybe I want more money if I'm going to engage with that. I don't know. That's a complete speculation. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
It has been a tough year. And again, it's going to be so different to different charities.
Mm.
And I think each charity is now going to be looking at reflecting on the last year and thinking about what that meant for them, but also what it means going forward. I know a lot of charities are struggling at the moment to plan long term because of, you know, funding pots having needing to be spent by March 31st if it was government funding, or, you know, a lot of trusts and foundations which have been great at redirecting funds to frontline services, but that having a shorter term kind of expenditure on it as well. So I think we need to kind of essentially wait and see what the longer term financial picture looks like, which should start coming out in the next few months.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Christiane. It's been a really interesting chat.
Thank you very much for having me.
Each week, we're bringing you a mini coronavirus care package. Good news stories we've spotted in the sector. This week, what have you got for us, Andy?
Well, as we record, the thing that's just been happening over the last weekend was the Sir Captain Tom 100, the fundraising challenge that was inspired by Captain Tom Moore's fundraising exploits from last year. And they have been encouraging everybody to do a fundraising challenge over the bank holiday weekend relating to the number 100. And there's been some extraordinary things that people have done over the course of the last few days to raise funds for charity. Not least Nathan Franklin Stokes, who is obviously a keen golfer, and he did 100 holes in a day to raise about £2,000 for the challenge. He started at 5:40 in the morning and finished his 100 holes 13 hours later. So well done to Nathan for doing that. Also, the firefighters at the Lincoln North Fire Station, each member of the crew climbed a vertical kilometre on ladders that they set up at their fire station to raise funds for the firefighters charity and St Barnabas Hospice.
So were they going up and then down the ladders? Yeah. Or like, was it one really tall ladder? I assume it wasn't one really tall ladder. Like
it wasn't a kilometre tall ladder, no.
Ruining my dreams.
They went up and down, but yeah, I'm guessing that, say what, a ladder must be like 50 metres at most, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not even going to be higher than that, so they must have had to do it quite a lot of times. So the well done to the firefighters there. And then we should also have a mention to the Formula One driver, Nicholas Latifi, who drives for the Williams Formula One team. And they did 100 pit stops over the course of the weekend to raise money. I don't know if that means they used 100 new sets of tyres. That probably would have been pretty expensive if they did that. But well done to them. They were raising money for the Spinal Injuries Association. What have you spotted, Rebecca, in recent days?
So I spotted a story and I saw the initial headline and I was like, So it said, Rajinder Singh is skipping the marathon. And I was like, yes, I too am taking the principled stand of not running the marathon this year and letting somebody else have my slot. That's a stand I'm taking. Turns out, no, he's not. That's not what he's doing at all. I'm alone there. So Rajinder Singh is 75 years old and he's known as the Skipping Sikh. And yeah, he does fundraising and awareness raising activities with a skipping rope. And sort of different challenges. And so he, at 75 years old, has got a place on the London Marathon in October. And he's going to be skipping for Mencap. So far, he has raised £1,200 of his £5,000 target. And it looks like a very fun and challenging way to do the marathon. And also, yeah, in terms of, I don't know that I want to be the person running behind him, but it looks like it's going to be, an impressive feat.
That is pretty good. If you had to do the marathon in an unusual way, how would you do it? Would you, going back to our previous conversation, maybe on a horse?
I'm not sure that's allowed, but yes, if I could do that, that would work for me. Yes. Maybe on a pantomime horse, I get somebody else to carry me, I guess.
I'm guessing lots of people will have done it in a stormtrooper costume.
Probably.
But, you know, if somebody wants to sponsor me to get a stormtrooper costume to do it, at some stage, then hey, I'd be up for that.
Andy is available for that, yes. Brilliant. So best of luck to Rajinder Singh. That's all from us this week. We'll be back with another episode soon. So make sure you subscribe to this, the Third Sector podcast, on your favourite podcast app to be the first to know about it.
Until then, I'm Andy Ricketts.
And I'm Rebecca Cooney.
And our producer is Lindsay Riley at Rethink Audio. We'll see you next week.